Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Morning. It is the 10th of July. The sun is now up here in the Midwest where so many of our listeners are. It's also up in the East Coast in Hartford and coming up in other parts of the country where you may be streaming our Faith Radio Morning Show live. I'm your host, Peter Kapsner. We start out with that truth about the tomb being empty every morning. Say it again right now, because in the midst of all the uncertainty and anxiety of life, what remains true is that our Savior lives and death has been beaten, and it just means that we can be hopeful moving forward in life. It doesn't take away from the present difficult circumstances. It just means that they are not the end of the story. And it's also representative, Logan, of the beautiful love of God that I just thought Gary Stratton last hour to end our hour with did an incredible job of reminding us that this journey is not about a transaction with Jesus, or it's not about a bunch of rules and regulations. We get swept up in the incredible story of God's love.
Yeah, nowhere in becoming a Christian do I remember signing a contract that has a very specific legal obligation. No, it's about so much more than that. And those are only meant to guide you onto the right path, but it's about this relationship that builds not only yourself but those around you and eventually toward a kingdom in heaven.
Yeah, I loved his description of the beginnings of creation, in which the Trinitarian God, out of this outflow of love, just began to bring all of this beauty into being. So again, it's Faith Radio Mornings. That was Logan Rausch here on sound and board. We've got Paul Perreault in the newsroom and Rachel Sutton booking the great guests for the show. We're going to break a little early because we have Dr. David Stevens on the line and so much to get into this hour with him, as well as a quick update from our foreign news affairs correspondent, Dr. David Aikman, about Brexit, and talking with Ron Deal a little later about blended families. So great show. Can't wait to get into things further. And with Dr. Stevens, we'll get into the very sensitive subject of Alzheimer's and the impact that it can have on so many of us in our journey as moving forward, and just some of the hopeful news maybe around some of that as well. Faith Radio Mornings, take a short break and be joined by Dr. David Stevens.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fear.
And that, of course, is the walk-up music of one of our dear friends of the show, Dr. David Stevens, who is the CEO of the Christian Medical and Dental Association, which is the nation's largest faith-based organization of healthcare professionals. Dr. Stevens joins us regularly to just talk through some of the top-of-the-mind health issues going around in our country. Good morning, Dr. Stevens. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Peter. How are you doing out there? A little cooler?
You know, we are not cooler. We're, you know, it feels like in everywhere in our country right now, right? It's hot. And you actually sent along an article about what the difficulty of working outside in the heat. And as we're dealing with 90-plus, 100-plus kinds of temperatures, what can we do to sort of survive the heat and make sure especially those working outside don't get hit with heat stroke?
Yeah, there's actually three categories of heat problems. One is just heat cramps, and you see this, well, people playing basketball. If you're watching a basketball game, you'll see someone grab their back of their leg or something, and they're having a cramp because they've gotten so hot and not sweating enough to get that heat off that they go get a massage and get some fluids and the rest of it. But then the second step is called heat exhaustion, and heat exhaustion is more dangerous. When that happens, your temperature's starting to rise. You're still sweating, maybe sweating very heavily, but your skin is kind of cool and moist. You're feeling faint and dizzy and fatigued, and you're cramping, and you may be nausea and headache, and that's a sign that you're getting too much heat on board. The next step after that is extremely dangerous, and you can die from it, and that's called heat stroke. And in that situation, Peter, you're losing consciousness, you're unable to drink, you may be confused, agitated, you're no longer sweating, your temperature is going up to 104 or higher, and if something's not done immediately, you essentially, for want of a better term, fry your brain. You get it so hot that your brain is damaged and you can die from it. And so it's serious. So there's things you can do to help prevent this. You just have to be careful when you're outside, especially when there's a high heat index. Heat and humidity make it even more dangerous.
Yeah, and I think about it, so from the Midwest here, anything above 70 degrees feels like it's stifling hot, you know, when you get used to the colder temperatures. But you know, it does get obviously up to 80, 90, 100 degrees all around our country. And for people that maybe not just working outside, but are inside and don't have any kind of climate control, there's no air conditioning, what can you suggest to them to sort of stay cool during this time and avoid some of these difficult heat exhaustion symptoms?
Well, you want to keep hydrated. Sports drinks are good because they contain some electrolytes, which are helpful. People at greatest danger, young age, under 4, and older people over 65. It can be made worse by the drugs you're taking, like antihistamines or certain tranquilizers, certain heart drugs, diuretics, water pills, as people call them. Some of the beta blockers make you at a greater risk. So put a fan on you. And if you don't have air conditioning, keep the windows open, drink a lot. You can even get a spray bottle with some spray water in it and just spray your skin, your legs, and your arms, which the evaporation is how you keep cool even from sweating. And so you can do that kind of artificially. And then don't, you know, wear a minimum clothes, just, you know, nothing real thick, nothing real heavy. And that helps you get rid of heat as well. And if you're still having problems, you need to notify the authorities and let them help you because this can get dangerous.
You know, so Logan just joined a gym last night as part of his health care. And he's wondering, actually, just type me some notes here, that by sports drinks, Dr. Stevens, do you mean milkshakes or are we talking about something different here?
I got to know these things.
That's not going to help your weight loss program too much there. If you're trying to, it may help you bulk up, give you some protein. I'll give you that, but you're going to have to work harder to get the calories off. Yeah, you know, it's important. That's why we have Gatorade and other brands, because you lose salt when you sweat. It's about quarter normal saline, as we would say in medicine. You're losing some salt all the time when you sweat, so you need to keep replacing that, and water's just not enough if you're extremely hot. And I noticed even out, you know, we had hot week out here in Tennessee last week, and I was out working in the yard and came home and got a big bottle of sports drink, and I felt a lot better. I was kind of getting a little dizzy and a little extra tired, and I'm just getting too hot. You got to be careful.
Yeah, it's Dr. David Stevens, who is the CEO of Christian Medical and Dental Associations, a faith-based organization, largest here in the country. And Dr. Stevens, you sent me some really interesting articles about some of the ongoing care for patients that have been struck by Alzheimer's disease, and just the difficulty of that. And it sounds like they're developing robots to help in the ongoing care of people with this difficult disease.
Yeah, you know, this is very tiring on caregivers. We know from experience, my wife's father lived with us for 7 years as he went through Alzheimer's, and we went from just some memory problems to agitation, to anger, to, you know, locking the door so he didn't wander off, and all those issues that come up. There's some work actually in creating robots to help with some of these care issues, helping patients in and out of bed, reminding them to take medications, providing ways through apps to try to stimulate their mind with pictures or music or whatever, and to help in that caregiving, because you can just wear out taking care of an Alzheimer patient. It's a 24-hour job. At some time. So I see the advantage of that, and I think it's a good thing. The other side of it, Peter, and I know your background in ethics, that this also has its danger, as any technology does. It can be used for good or it can be used for evil. And in this situation, people can just use this type of technology to warehouse, essentially, their loved one and not do their part. People need human contact that have Alzheimer's disease, not just robotic contact. So I can see these helping assist, but they do not replace a human care.
And you mentioned the ethics part of it. It is such a difficult disease in so many dimensions. And I know one of the questions that might come up in one of my classes is the idea, as if somebody's brain begins to deteriorate and they can't remember maybe their closest loved ones anymore. I mean, I don't know of a more difficult journey than that for people. And I think there's even questions, is this person even there anymore? But, you know, Dr. Stevens, we're talking about a deterioration of the brain, not of somebody's soul, right? I mean, they're still there, even if the mode of communication is deteriorating.
Yeah, the world preaches this idea that your personhood is based on your capacity to communicate, your capacity to think, your capacity to do all these things. And this is a very dangerous concept because it affects the beginning of life, the end of life, and in between life as people lose some of their mental capacities. And we have to remember that we're made in God's image. We are a person because God created us as persons. And therefore, we have human dignity and worth, not dependent upon what our capabilities are. And that gives a whole different view of how you view Alzheimer's patients. I remember my own father-in-law. I mean, he got violent, had to take him to a psychiatric ward. He threatened the psych resident. And I turned to him and said, "Dad Thacker," he was a Christian college professor, you know, before he was struck with this disease. And I said, "Dad Thacker, God wouldn't want you to say that." And he turned to me and said, "Me and God have had a parting." And you had to chuckle because you knew that, you know, he's a lay pastor, mayor of the city, you know, all these type of things. And so his mental capacity wasn't there, but he still was my father-in-law, loved by God and indwelled with his dignity and his image.
And you know, we just have a minute left before the break, but I'd be curious, you know, caregivers need caregivers in the situation, right? To try to walk out this journey as the caregiver of somebody with Alzheimer's, you're going to need a support network around you as well.
Absolutely. You got to have some relief and hopefully more family that's there to help or friends or whatever. And if you don't have a family member with Alzheimer's, you can be one of those people that can come in and help them. And it won't be easy, but God will bless you for being a servant, for reaching out to someone that is sick and supporting someone that is worn out from the care they're giving. And there's blessings found in being a servant.
So Dr. David Stevens, we're going to take a short break. And Dr. Stevens, when we come back, we have more good news coming out of the situation in Thailand where these young soccer players had been in a cave for the better part of 2 weeks and I'm sure struggling with all kinds of symptoms. But it sounds like the soccer coach has also come out of the cave now at this point. And I'd be curious to just get your feedback about what are they likely dealing with physically, emotionally after all this time in the cave. We'll take a short break and be back with Dr. David Stevens. It is 19 minutes past the hour. This is Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Peter Kapsner. And Paul, it sounds like we do have one more update about what's the situation in Thailand.
Yes, hope the final update too, but it looks like they got the coach out as well from the Wild Boar soccer team there in Thailand. So all 12 boys and the coach are safe and sound, getting medical attention right now. And last I heard, they're going to be in the hospital for probably a week or so, but they should be doing well.
Well, it's good timing to have Dr. David Stevens with us right at this moment, too. Dr. Stevens, I don't know how closely you've been following the situation in Thailand, but what are these boys likely dealing with and the coach as well, having been, you know, without a lot of food and water and even without oxygen for a pretty extended period of time?
Yeah, malnutrition is one of the concerns, and I'm sure they started bringing food in when the divers got there. But secondly, lack of rest. I mean, try to sleep on a rock. I mean, that's what they were sitting on in the cave for all that time. You're in a very moist, wet environment, which is a recipe for skin diseases. It's also a recipe for pneumonia. And with exhaustion and everything else going on, you're much more susceptible to that. So they're going to be watching that very closely, trying to make sure they're well hydrated, make sure that they're getting calories into them, taking care of skin disease, any type of infections, that type of thing. And then the psychological consequences of this. This is a terrifying experience, being down there in the dark before the divers first arrived for a long period of time. Thinking they may die, that they may drown, and all the rest of it. There can be post-traumatic stress disorder and other things that require counseling and encouragement and perhaps even some sort of treatment to help them deal with what they've been through. Kids are pretty resilient, but there's still issues that have to be dealt with and a good physical and hospital care to make sure nothing serious is going on is all in order.
And, you know, I think we take for granted in the States just the quality and the level of our health care compared to that, which is some of the global systems. I don't know what the health care is like in Thailand, but your background, you, way more than the CEO of this organization, you spent years and years and years in the missional medical field. And what do you see? What are you doing even today as you're empowering people to get into medical missions around the world?
Well, it's interesting, Peter. There's a real renaissance of God calling people into medical missions. We do a large medical mission conference each year. It's now grown to over 3,000 people, and half of those are students and residents praying about God's call in their life or already feeling it and preparing to go. So, and many of them, it's interesting, over half of them are focused on difficult-to-access countries. That's where the God wants them to go. 25% don't know, and 25% already established medical mission work. If you look at Africa, and that's where I served, 40 to 70% of the hospital beds in the continent in sub-Saharan Africa are still in mission and church hospitals. So this is a big part of the healthcare system there. And, of course, huge issues with advanced diseases and problems and infections and epidemics and you name it, you're going to face it. Interesting, though, in Thailand, they actually have a very – I've been to Thailand a number of times. They have a fairly advanced medical system and a lot of medical tourism, people coming from developed countries to get procedures or treatment at their hospitals at a much lesser cost. And many of their hospitals are actually certified by Western certification organizations to the quality of them. So I think they're going to get good care in Thailand, but other places in the world, if this had happened, they wouldn't have.
And I think there's, you know, there's so much in terms of happening with young people these days that are wanting to get into the kinds of fields you described. They want to make a difference. Logan and I talk about this quite a bit, too, that maybe in my generation there was a lot of building of personal wealth going on. And mm-hmm. Logan, I know for your generation there's this sort of desire to move out of that way of life and to help serve people.
I mean, there's no question that millennials and young people, they're really about the hands and feet of God. They want to go and be doing this work. I think the question we ask ourselves most often is, one, is it affordable? Two, where can we go? I mean, it's obvious that help is needed in the world. Where is a good place for a young person to start looking at missions, especially through health-related fields in countries that could really use that need?
Well, I think the first thing is to get some experience. And my dad took me to the mission field in 1965. That's for most friends even gotten an airplane and down to Haiti. And I saw a nurse having to diagnose and treat. And God used that to call me into a career of medical missions. And so expose yourself. And short term is a good way to do that. But don't stop there. You can kind of do medical tourism in the sense of going and doing a short-term experience. You got to keep throwing wood on the fire, especially during those long years of training if you're going to be a physician or nurse or whatever, and keep that fire alive of God's call in your life and take longer experiences. Went back and spent a couple months overseas where I ended up serving during medical school, went back over during residency. And then preparing yourself. We actually have a program called Your Call, and we have over 1,500 healthcare students that we are mentoring during their training years to help them to keep on course. Because what happens in medical training is that you are professionalized. By that, I mean you're taught to be in charge, take control, not lose your cool, be professional in your approach. And you become very self-confident in your capabilities, and that can be a recipe for beginning to rationalize away your call into medical missions. Almost happened to me as a third-year resident, and begin thinking, do I want some mission organization tell me when to come and go, and I'm not going to have much of a salary, and I won't be self-sufficient, and all those issues, to finally, in the middle of the night, I got down on my knees by my bed with my wife, and we said, we're going. Mm. And look back, and that was a crossroads in our life that I'm so glad we took the right one.
That's a beautiful story. We just have a minute left, Dr. Stevens. I'd be curious, as you have then practiced missional medical work, what have you seen about the power of bringing care for people alongside of the gospel? So they're both working hand in hand.
It is so important, and one of the things you have to be so careful with as a medical missionary, you can get so busy doing good things that you don't do the most important thing. You can't make people live forever, no matter how good a doctor you are. It's only as you introduce them to Christ. And I remember as a new missionary, I'll tell you the story sometime, but when that day happened, I was working so hard, three doctors, 300,000 people were responsible for a hospital that had 180% occupancy, two or three patients to a bed, six trained nurses. We were just overwhelmed, and you get so busy trying to deal with all this suffering, but you cannot forget the most important thing and be involved personally as well as setting up systems with chaplains and others to share the gospel to every patient that comes into the hospital, because it's an effective time to reach them for the Lord. And in many countries, all of them know there's some spiritual issue in back of their physical illness, and they're eager to hear the gospel.
I love that. I'd love to hear that story next time that you're on. If somebody is interested actually in getting involved in medical missions, is there some resources that you have available for them?
Absolutely. Go to cmda.org. That's our website, cmda.org. And Global Health Outreach, you can go on a short-term medical mission team. If you're in healthcare, we have that, as well as Medical Education International, using education to get into difficult-to-access countries to educate other healthcare professionals, build relationships, and share the gospel with them.
Grace, thanks for joining us again, Dr. Stevens. Really appreciate the time today.
God bless.
We'll take a short break, and when we'll get into Breakpoint here in just a minute. And Logan, my understanding is we're going to talk about the persecution of Christians in Nigeria. You won't want to miss this. Appreciated that Breakpoint, Logan. I know Ruth Kramer from Mission Network News. We are going to try to get into some of these headlines of Christians being persecuted in Nigeria, and ran out of time, but it's a really good reminder of just praying for our brothers and sisters globally who are in need.
It is a brave dedication and commitment to voluntarily step into a country where you know not only are you not welcome, but you might be killed for what you're trying to say. That is a level of commitment and integrity that is just so incredible and absolutely deserves our prayers in hopes that there's success.
Yeah, it's powerful. And beautiful and hard and just so representative of the kingdom. Let's take a break for news. When we come back, we'll have a special segment. Dr. David Aikman will join us briefly to give us an update as things continue to roll in the UK around this Brexit conversation.
My name is Bond, James Bond.
And that, of course, is the intro for our foreign affairs correspondent, Dr. David Aikman, who normally joins us on Mondays. But Dr. Aikman, thanks for taking the quick call over in Ireland. We had breaking news out of Brexit. Not only did Davis resign, but now it seems like the prime minister is losing a lot of her cabinet. Boris Johnson resigned last night, too. Give us a little sense. What's happening there real quick?
Well, what happened was that Theresa May had an away meeting of her cabinet at Chequers, the country home of British prime ministers, which Winston Churchill originally had. And at the meeting, it was intended that the cabinet would come to a consensus, an agreement behind her approach to negotiating Brexit. So what she had to do was to get those cabinet members who are firm Brexiteers, sort of philosophically in favor of getting out of the European Union, she had to get them in agreement with the ardent Remainers, those members of her cabinet who had voted to remain in the EU and who want to have the closest possible relationship with the EU after Britain leaves it. So she actually did get a sort of consensus at the meeting, but apparently after thinking it over for a few hours, the Secretary of Brexit, David Davis, who does all the negotiating with the European Union, decided that it conceded too much to the Remainers, and he couldn't go along with her anymore. And Boris Johnson, a few hours later, decided that he couldn't agree with it also. So then you had a big hole in the cabinet and a major discussion with Conservative backbencher members of Parliament whether Theresa May's leadership was in doubt. And if you ask me that question, the answer at this point is no, for the reasons which I'll explain if you have time.
Well, I would love to get, I mean, things are happening so quickly, and we do have Ron Deal on the line to talk blended families in our next segment, but just to get these ongoing updates, Dr. Aikman, I would love to even just check in tomorrow and see where we are with what's happening, because things are moving with lightning speed. But thanks for taking a few minutes just to give us this update here this morning.
Well, thank you very much. I'm very happy to have been asked.
Yeah, appreciate it. Well, I look forward to talking to you again soon, and we just love the updates from that side of the pond. It's 39 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break and be back with Ron Deal from Blended Families. It is 20 minutes until the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. And Logan, I love that, you know, Paul can just call Ireland at a moment's notice and get Dr. David Aikman for a quick update over there.
Paul has the connections to every major phone number in the world. He's got this big black book he keeps hidden from the rest of us. I want a few numbers on there. Yes, I do want to talk to Brad Pitt, Paul. Come on.
He is sort of the human Rolodex. It's great. So I have on the line now Ron Deal of Blended Family Network. And Ron, thanks for your patience on that piece. And I'm so glad you're joining us this morning to talk about just the challenges of being a blended family and how we can come around to just help the process of and patterns of divorce and end some of those things and help to really encourage our blended family. So good morning, Ron.
Good morning to you, and thanks for having me on the show. And yes, he even has a black book with my number all the way to Little Rock in it.
His powers know no end, Ron. That's great.
That's right.
So obviously you have a show that you do, and it focuses around blended families. And again, I can think of few topics more important than that, just the challenges of bringing, and as you would say, grafting families together and bringing even step-parents into the relationship. And I know a lot of my friends and people that have to walk out this journey. And so talk to us just about what your ministry does, what your radio show does to help people in this situation.
Yeah, Family Life Blended is a division of the Ministry of Family Life. Where people aren't familiar with Family Life, we do marriage and family education all over the world and the national radio broadcast Family Life Today. And then I have a daily feature called Family Life Blended. We help step families. We help people who find themselves in Plan B, help them do it well, help them do it to the glory of God. And we believe very strongly, and there's even research to suggest that healthy step families are a turning point in the generational pathway of the family. That is, you may have been through some hardship by death or divorce or disillusion of a relationship, but this can be the turning point that helps the next generation move back towards Plan A, if you will. And so that's what we do. It's a redemptive ministry, and it's a real honor and pleasure to be a part of it.
Well, I think it's such an important message too, because I think people who can feel like they're such failures, right? Yeah, where as you mentioned, maybe Plan A didn't work according to what they thought, and that think that's for all of our lives, right? And that's where the cross and the empty tomb can redeem all things and create a different kind of future. And I'd love to just hear your perspective on what it means to be the step-parent in a blended family where maybe you don't have responsibilities from a legal standpoint, but if a spouse dies, but what it means to have a responsibility for that family, saying yes to everybody in that family for a lifetime, not just, you know, for the legalities of it.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's think about that for a minute. The world is talking a lot about foster parenting. We're talking a lot about adoption these days. Those people step into a place where there's a child in need, and they make a difference. If there's one thing we know about the heart of Christ, it's to minister to the disenfranchised, to those that are without, if you will, widows, the orphans, etc. And step-parents functionally do the very same thing. They come in a place where they don't have any moral responsibility, don't have any moral obligation, don't have financial responsibility, don't emotional responsibility, and then as you mentioned, they don't even really have the legal ties. You know, the law doesn't really recognize the step parent's role from any sort of longevity standpoint. If the biological parent dies, they will not stay with the step parent. The children don't, because there's not a legal tie there. So without any of that, they step in anyway and make a difference. You know, there's a lot of people in Thailand right now who it's not their child in a cave. And they've spent the last number of days, weeks, giving their time and their energy to help, to rescue, to support. You know, the world is watching. We're astounded by that. Step-parents do it every single day. And you know, and then we step around that. We go, okay, how much support do we give step-parents? How often do you shake somebody's hand at church and go, you know, thank you for what you're doing for your stepkids? You know, we really don't even support them on the back end, and the church as a whole has not really known how to do that and hasn't been proactive in it. Well, that's part of what we're doing. We're trying to help step-parents understand their role, how to do it really well, how to work with the biological parent on behalf of the children, and how to help the church support and educate and encourage over the long haul. And really, that's our ministry. But you stop and you think about the people we're serving. Well, of course, it's a noble role that they're playing in the lives of children.
So it's Ron Deal from Family Life Blended. And Ron, I love that statement just about how we can come around people that are in blended families, because unfortunately there does get to be a stigma in churches. And I know people would describe feeling like they have the scarlet letter D on their forehead walking around from divorce. And you get almost communicate this message that there's some sort of unforgivable reality here, but that simply isn't true in God's kingdom, right?
It's absolutely true. And let me just quickly remind everybody, we're not just talking about people that have been through a divorce. By the way, a lot of people in step families didn't get there. If you're a step parent, you may not have made any choice, may not have been through any sort of, you know, you've walked into a situation, you know. But recently I was speaking, I do conferences around the country, going to be in the Wisconsin area, I think one of your listening areas here in the near future. I was down in the New Orleans area speaking at a church, and a guy comes up to me at a break, and here he's 74. He's been married for 3 years. His first wife passed away of cancer 9 years prior. So here he is married 3 years. His son says, "Dad, I'm all in. I'm with you." His, you know, son's in his mid-40s. His two daughters boycott the wedding and have been out of his life ever since he got married again. You know, so step family living is not necessarily, you know, a lot of people associate it with there's sin involved. Well, no. I mean, we're talking about a generational step family that impacts 2-3 generations when mom passes away and dad marries again. We should move past the sin conversation to the how do we redeem, how do we support, how do we help, how do we encourage. That's the role of the church. So let's do that in this situation, and we're making a difference there.
That's Ron Deal, and we're going to take a short break, Ron, but I would love to get in some of the specifics of exactly what you just mentioned, which is how can we empower a step-parent to really grow in a relationship that's more than just some sort of care provider, but really a loving parental kind of role, and even how kids can come together as step-brothers and sisters into this beautiful blended family that is possible. So love to get in to that with you, and we'll take a short break and be back in just a minute. It is 10 minutes before the top of the hour, and we have on the line Ron Deal of Blended Family Network. And Ron, you mentioned you're going to be up in Wisconsin here shortly, and we do have a great listening audience right out of Madison. Where are you going to be? What are you doing?
I'm going to be in Milwaukee, September 14 and 15, speaking for a church, doing a step family conference. People can find all the information they need at smartstepfamilies.com.
Is it an overnight kind of retreat, or how would you participate in this?
Yeah, it's a Friday night and Saturday morning event. And so we'll be talking about a variety of things related to healthy blended family living, just, you know, working, supporting your marriage within the step family, parenting and step parenting. We'll be talking about kids and what they need most and how the transitions of loss affect their ability to bond with step family relationships within their new home. And it's a great opportunity for churches and church leaders to get exposed to some understanding so that they go back to their church communities and have a fuller understanding of how they can help other blended families.
Well, let's get into that. I think that's a great invitation. I mean, starting with if you are the step parent in a situation, whether it's through divorce or widowed, and you walk into a family and now you have kids, maybe they're 5 years old, maybe they're 15 years old, and you haven't known them before this time, how do you begin to grow in that authentic kind of parenting relationship as opposed to just being a caregiver of some kind in the family?
You know, I was thinking a little bit, mentioned earlier about the people in Thailand trying to rescue those kids in the cave. Imagine all the volunteers coming to support. First of all, it's dangerous. We do know that one former SEAL has, you know, lost their life as a result. But imagine the people showing up at the cave, you probably like us watching from the outside, like, oh, okay, we need to help. Like, what do we do? Well, first of all, we got to understand the cave is a lot deeper than you thought. I mean, we're talking 2 or 3 miles to where these kids are. We're not just making a 50-foot, you know, go into the cave and get them and bring them out. And then there's going to be narrow passageways, and there's going to be water. You're going to have to learn how to dive. You're going to have to go under. You're going to have to learn that, you know, you got to breathe. You got to manage yourself within those narrow spaces. And when you're unsure, the water's murky so that you can't see very clearly. That's kind of a big metaphor for, all right, you're a step-parent. You got to, the life of this child is much deeper than what you see on the surface. There's a history here. They've been through some loss, some sadness. That loss has changed that child. You need to get to know that space because you're going to be living in that. It's going to be murky. There'll be moments where you're not sure what to do. Should I step in here? Should I not step in here? Do I have a place? Do I not have a place? Would this child hear me if I said, look, let me speak into your life for a minute? Is that a wise thing for me to do at this moment in time? You can see that there's a myriad of questions. I think one of the things that we teach step parents is it's ambiguous. Like your role is unclear. Now you're standing next to your spouse who has a very clear parenting relationship with your children. So you have to be a team. You have to let the person with the clarity in their role, the biological parent, do the really hard things in the early years of your blended family because their role and their identity with the child is very clear and established. Your role's murky and ambiguous, so we want you to hang back and focus on relationship building. If we kept our metaphor in the cave, we want you to be the ones who's extending the rope towards the children. We want you to create a connection, get to know them, let them learn how to trust you. That is what then will lead, give you the ability to say, follow me, this is the way out. But without that connection, if you just start barking orders, they don't know who you are, they don't know where you are, they don't know how to trust you, there's nothing there to tie you together. So there's this process of understanding the cave, the passageways, the murkiness of the water, then beginning to feel your way through to build a connection. Once you get a connection, then you're growing your influence in the child's life. And over time, you can lead them in really healthy directions. So most of the parents didn't know that when they got married. They didn't quite understand how deep the cave was, how narrow the passage. And so it's challenging for them. And so, again, support, education, equipping, coming around them, that really makes a big difference.
I love the analogy, just pulling that into it, because it really does describe it. It can be a bit of an arduous journey, right, to develop that sense of relationship and trust, especially with grieving children who, for one reason or another, their parent is not in the house and in their life anymore. And so I'm guessing it requires a steadfastness, a sort of a patience, a forbearance to really grow that relationship.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a long-term dedication process. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. How long have those kids been in the cave? A lot longer than any of us thought when we first learned about this. You know, it's just it's a more challenging process. Now, some step parents find that it's a very easy process for whatever reason. There's a number of factors that can make that, but most of it is not within their power or control. You know, the other step parents find that child doesn't want to come out of the cave. And, you know, like, what do you do then? You know, and so those nuances there. By the way, I should mention one of the reasons we're developing so many resources, online video resources for parents, step parents, book resources, curriculum for churches, is because step families are complex and not every cave journey, if you will, is the same. And so we're trying to speak to the many myriad of situations that people and step parents and step children find themselves in. So that people will have a guide, have a map. I think it's making a difference. I've been doing this now for over 25 years, and we really do hear from people what a blessing it has been. When you put a map in somebody's hand, all of a sudden they feel like there's some direction and there's hope and they can follow.
Ron, it's such important stuff. So we have to run for a break. But just before we go, give us the website where parents can go to access some of these resources and tell us about the conference again in Wisconsin and Milwaukee, actually, in September.
Yes. Yeah, so two websites. If you want to know about the conference in Wisconsin in September 14 and 15, go to smartstepfamilies.com. You'll be able to find the event, smartstepfamilies.com. For everything else, online articles, tools, resources, a map, you can search and find a church in your area with a step family ministry, conferences where we equip church leaders, go to familylife.com, familylife.com, and just click Blended Family.
Great stuff, Ron. Thanks for joining us this morning here on Faith Radio Mornings.
All right, take care.
We'll take a short break and wrap up our show. Well, great show again today, Paul. Thanks for all your work keeping us updated on the situation in Thailand.
You're welcome. And again, prayer works. Prayer works. And they are all safe, all members of the soccer team.
Oh, goodness. That's so exciting to hear about. I mean, it just worked out the best way you could have possibly imagined.
Yeah, and you mentioned prayer works. And that, I was really impacted by Ruth Kramer again. I mentioned her. She was on yesterday and talking about the importance of prayer. And even when we feel disempowered by these headlines, it is one thing we can always do is pray.
Exactly. Exactly. So pray the news, as somebody once said.
I love that. Thanks again for listening here to Faith Radio Mornings. And just remember that regardless of what happens in life, the tomb is empty. There is always hope and there is always future in the beautiful kingdom of Jesus.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.